You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I know, according to all natural laws, it's impossible. Completely, utterly impossible. But I tell you, and I swear to it, that I and I alone am guilty of this murder. As guilty as though I'd killed him with my own two hands. So you must tell them, the police. You must tell them. Because they'd never believe me. Because it is impossible. But it happened.
Listen now to Act One of Dreams, starring Philip Sterling and written especially for Suspense by Jack Bundy.
Yes?
Dr. Harris.
Yes?
Yes. Yes, you are Dr. Harris. Yeah. I know, because I saw you. I heard you make that speech last week at the Civic Auditorium about the supernatural and premonitions and telepathy and about dreams, Doctor, about
yes,
dreams.
Yes, yes.
And I should have told you about it then. I was a fool. I was such a fool not to.
Tell me about what, young man?
These dreams, these terrible dreams that I have that... Oh, if only I'd come to you before.
Yes, well, who are you, young man? And please, please get hold of yourself. Now, well...
I'm sorry, Doctor, I'm sorry. My name is Kingman. Robert Kingman.
Yes?
I live here in the village, and I work at Blake Electronics, and I... Please, sir, let me come in, because I think you can help me.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a medical doctor, Kingman. I'm only a student of the supernatural. Extrasensory perception,
yes, that's yes, all. And... And you know about dreams and premonitions and things.
Well,
that's why I've come to you. And listen, your speech, your lecture the other night, you talked about dreams coming true.
Now, I talked about the possibility of such things, yes.
Oh, if I'd only talked to you then, there at your lecture, and told you about this, perhaps you could have helped me before it was too late. But I hope to heaven that even now you can help me. If you will, Dr. Harris.
Well, perhaps you'd better come in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right in here, Kingman.
Thank you, sir.
A little drink, perhaps, to calm your nerves.
No. Just let me tell you about these terrible things that I've done. If I don't tell somebody, I'll go crazy.
Oh, now, come on. Well, we can sit right down here.
Thank you.
Now.
Like I said, it's these dreams of mine, these fantastic dreams I have. They've nearly driven me out of my mind. And you know why? Because they made a killer out of me. Do you understand, sir? I'm a murderer. I've murdered a man.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Kingman.
Yes?
If you have killed someone...
And I have, Doctor. I've killed him.
Then why do you come to me? The police are the ones you must go to.
The police?
Of course.
But what would they do? What could they do? Don't you see, Doctor? They wouldn't understand. They wouldn't believe me.
Nonetheless, my boy, if there actually has been a
but
murder...
But don't you see? It isn't as though I actually killed him with my own two hands, as though I actually struck him down. But I might as well have. Don't you see that?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
But it's true. I'm responsible. I'm wholly and totally responsible. No one else. But I can't tell the police about it.
Look, Kingman.
Don't you see? Because you know about such things, you can make them understand. And then if they say I'm legally guilty... All right, yes. Yes, then I'll take the consequences, even if I have to die for it.
Now, Robert...
But my wife says I'm not responsible. Janet says I can't be. It's impossible. And yet, after all that happened, I don't know. I don't know what to do. Please, you've got to help me, Dr. Harris.
Well, you can hardly expect me to help you until you calm down enough to start at the beginning and tell me just what this is all about. Now, so far, you've really told me nothing.
I'm sorry, Doctor. I'm sorry. It's just that... Well, I'm sorry, but listen, please.
Yes.
It was only last month. One morning last month. My wife, Janet, and I were sitting having breakfast together.
Darling, why aren't you eating your breakfast? Isn't everything all right?
Huh? What? Oh, sure, of course it is, honey.
Then why aren't you eating? The way you've been sitting there, staring into space. Something wrong, darling?
Wrong? No, of course not, Janet. I guess I'm just not hungry this morning, that's all.
Is it?
Sure.
That isn't true, dear. Something is wrong. Now, what is it, Bob?
Janet, do you remember that funny dream I had about a week ago?
You mean about my brother, Walter, falling down the steps and breaking his wrist?
Yes.
Well, I'd hardly call it funny.
I know, because that's exactly what happened to him the very next day. I dreamed it, and then it happened.
Uh-huh. It was a real strange coincidence.
Only it wasn't. It wasn't coincidence, Janet.
But it must have been.
No, dear. Had I ever before told you about a dream of mine?
No, I guess not.
Honey, that was the first dream I'd had since I was just a little kid. When I was a kid, I had dreams all the time that came true, like the one about Joey Prentice, the boy next door, just before he drowned in Parvin's pond. Like the one of my father before he died. I dreamed only when something like that was going to happen.
Even so, darling.
So, don't you see, Janet, the one about your brother was far more than just a dream. It was a definite premonition.
Well, maybe it was, and probably it wasn't. Anyhow, you and I know better than to believe in premonitions. So just forget it, dear, and eat this nice breakfast I've fixed for you.
Hmm? No. It's not that easy, I'm afraid.
Why not?
Last night, dear, I had another dream. And if it comes true...
Oh, now, honey, don't sit there and tell me you've actually lost your appetite just because of a dream you had.
Yes.
But, darling, that's silly. Unless it was a horrible nightmare.
No, it wasn't a nightmare. But the dream was all so clear. I had a fight with Stanley Bolton.
Bolton?
Yes. He's not only head of research, but a vice president, too. And the one man who could block the promotion promised me by Mr. Blake.
Oh.
Yes.
But just a dream, dear.
That promotion means everything to me, Janet. To both of us.
Of course it does. You've worked for it, and you've earned it. But surely something you happen to dream about isn't going to keep you from getting it.
I wonder.
Well, just stop wondering right this minute, Robert Kingman, and eat your breakfast. It is kind of silly, you know, isn't it? Really, if you take the time...
Well, I certainly hope your wife was right, but... go on, Kingman.
Doctor, at the office that day, I watched my step every minute to make sure that nothing could possibly go wrong. And I carefully avoided Mr. Bolton. But then as the day wore on and nothing out of the way happened, well, I began to breathe more easily and decided I'd worried about nothing at all. But a few minutes after 5, as I finished things up for the day...
I'll have this... finished for you in just a second, Mr. Kingman.
Oh, good, Miss Reichardt. Then you might as well run along home. Hmm?
There now. Here you are.
Oh, fine. Let's see.
If you'll sign it, I'll have the envelope all ready and I'll mail it on the way out.
Mm-hmm. Here you are.
Thank you. Well, good night, Mr. Kingman.
Good night, Miss Rack.
Out of my way, Reichardt.
Excuse me.
All right now, Kingman.
Yes, Mr. Bolton.
Why haven't I received the foreign sales records for last month?
Well, today is only the 8th, Mr. Bolton, and we don't usually put together these reports until
today is only the 8th. Well, how nice of you to tell me. But, Kingman, if Scoville is to take those records with him to the Toronto office tomorrow, he's got to have them immediately and in perfect order.
Scoville? Toronto? I didn't know anything
you
about it.
You didn't know. You think that's any excuse?
But I'm usually notified if someone needs material like that.
Negligent, that's the trouble with you. Utterly irresponsible.
Well, Mr.
And you're the one that Mr. Blake was considering for promotion, hmm? Well, I'll soon put a stop to that.
But Mr. Bolton, I...
Scoville is leaving on the 2:40 tomorrow. And if those figures aren't ready for him, you'd better look for another job.
And then, Kingman, what happened then?
The next morning, Mr. Blake called me in and politely told me the promotion would have to wait. Perhaps another year until Mr. Bolton was better satisfied with my work.
Well, I'm sorry, but now, look, my boy, if that one incident, that coincidence about...
Coincidence?
Yes, if that's all that brought you here to see me, so upset and so...
Didn't you hear me? Don't you understand? That was only the beginning of the dreams that have made me a killer. And when you hear the rest of the terrible things I've dreamed about that have happened, heaven forgive me for what I've done.
In a moment, we'll return for Act Two of Suspense.
If you leave your car outside at night and hope in the morning it'll be all right, if your car's in a garage that has no heat, you want antifreeze protection that's real complete. Don't ask for trouble. Ask for DuPont Xerox Antifreeze.
For dependable protection against sudden drops in temperature all winter long, use DuPont Xerox Antifreeze. Even during a warm spell, Xerox won't boil away. It outlasts winter. And to guard against damaging rust and corrosion, Xerox has MR8 Rust Inhibitor, an exclusive DuPont development that protects all engine metals, including aluminum. So for safe, dependable protection, do as millions of motorists have done for over 20 years. Ask for Xerox Antifreeze. It's made by DuPont. Remember,
for cars left out at night or in unheated garages, don't ask for trouble. Ask for DuPont Xerox Antifreeze.
You had more of these so-called premonitory dreams then?
Yes, Doctor. Because I wanted to. Because I wanted to get even. I'd banked a lot on that promotion. Now I'd lost any chance for it thanks to Mr. Bolton. I knew it wasn't right, but I couldn't help hating him almost viciously. And I couldn't get him or my hatred for him or what he'd done to us. I couldn't get it out of my mind. I couldn't get him out of my mind. And then a few nights later, I dreamed about him again. It was a weird, a crazy, a fantastic sort of dream.
Well, what do you want with me, Kingman? What do you want? And why do you have me penned up in this place?
Like a jail, isn't it, Mr. Bolton? These high walls of heavy concrete blocks.
Well?
I built this place myself, Mr. Bolton, just for you. There's no door, no windows, there's no way out for you. You can't get away from me. And now I'm going to pay you back, Mr. Bolton, for what you've done to me.
You're crazy, Kingman. You can't hurt me. This is only a dream. Only a dream, do you hear me?
But it's my dream. It's my dream, Mr. Bolton.
Now, Kingman.
And that's why you can't help yourself. When I beat you and beat you the way you deserve. Are you ready?
Stop!
Are you ready?
Stop! Stay away from me!
Well, I'm ready.
Now!
No! Get away from me! No! No! Get away from me! No!
And you did beat him in this dream of yours?
Unmercifully. Until he fell unconscious.
Well, I hardly see anything about it to worry you, Kingman.
But wait.
I can hardly picture anything like that actually happening, dream or no dream.
Wait, Doctor. When I woke up in the morning, my hands were sore. My knuckles were all bruised.
And I imagine you'd done a pretty good job of tearing up the bedclothes, too, then, hadn't you?
Doctor.
Mr. Kingman. Now, Robert, you must understand something. After what had happened at the office between you and Mr. Bolden, a dream like that was the most natural thing in the world. Dreams spring from the unconscious. And so far as this man Bolton is concerned, in your subconscious
No,
mind...
wait, please. You've got to hear me out.
Very well, go on.
When I got to the office the next morning, everybody was commiserating with Mr. Bolton because of the terrible bumps and bruises all over his head.
Really? Well, and how did he explain them?
He said that he'd fallen out of his bed during the night. But with all those bruises, he'd have to have fallen out a dozen times. And then when he saw me, Doctor, it was just as though he knew. It was just as though he knew that I had somehow made it happen to him. And from that point on, he never let up on me. Day after day, everything I did was wrong.
Now, wait a minute.
No, Doctor. I began to hate him more bitterly than anything or any person I'd ever hated before. It became an obsession I couldn't shake off. And then suddenly it dawned on me. All my dreams had come true. And that meant my dreams would come true. Whatever I dreamed would have to come true. So from that moment on, I knew what I had to do. I knew that I would never have any peace until I dreamed about, and therefore brought about, the death of Stanley Bolton. Yes, Doctor. The more I thought about it, the more I became convinced, the more I knew that anything I dreamed about would have to come to pass. Not exactly as I dreamed it, perhaps, but the result would be the same. And so every night before I dropped off to sleep, I thought of nothing but Stanley Bolton, of all the hatred I had for him. I concentrated all my thoughts on him and nothing else, Doctor, and I focused my thoughts on his murder.
No,
but it didn't work. I couldn't seem to dream again, try as I might.
Well, perhaps that's for the best.
Not until 3 nights ago.
Oh?
And again, Doctor, it was a wild, crazy, utterly fantastic dream. There was a big empty square, a city block or more, with a high, thick wall around it, much bigger than the place I'd dreamed about before. And there was a car, a sports car, a sort of racing car, a very fast one, driving around in this place as though it were hunting for something. All of a sudden, the way it can happen only in a dream, I was in that car. I was driving it. I was hunting for something, or someone, frantically. And then as I wildly spun and swerved the car about, then I saw him, Bolton. And he knew me, and he knew I was after him, and he knew that this time he wouldn't get away alive.
Stop! Stop, you fool! You run me down! Run! Go ahead and run, Bolton! You think you can outrun me in this? Try it! Try it!
No, help! You'll kill me!
But it's only a dream, remember? So run your legs off, Bolton, and see what good it will do you.
Please, please, go back!
Are you ready? Are you ready? Well, I'm ready. Now!
Well, Kingman.
The next morning, when I got to the office, I learned that Mr. Bolton had been killed.
What?
Yes. By some hit-and-run driver in a sports car.
Good heavens.
Yes. And do you know why, Doctor? Because of my dream. Because it's what I wanted to dream. So I'm guilty of Stanley Bolton's murder.
No. No, you aren't. You had nothing to do with the car that ran him down.
Of course I didn't, but I'm still to blame.
How can you be?
Because I am. Because now... Now I have proof that I am.
Proof?
Yes. Because last night I dreamed again.
Yes?
I dreamed that for what I'd done, I was electrocuted. What can I do? Doctor, what can I do?
I don't know. I don't know. I must have time to think about this.
But you believe me. You believe me, what I've told you.
Yes, yes, Robert, I believe you. And I believe you need help.
If I go to the police, if they believe me, it can mean only one thing. The death penalty. Electrocution.
Now, Robert, listen to me. You may feel any way you wish about this whole gruesome affair. And because of the strain it's imposed on you, I can understand why you're so upset about it. But we've got to be realistic about this. Now, legally, there is no possible way in which you could be found guilty of Bolton's murder. So first, we have to think about you, about how to ease your mind, your conscience of this... Oh, wait now.
What?
Of course, I should have thought of him when you came here.
Yes, Doctor? Someone who can help me?
Robert, I know it's late, but I want you to go and see an old friend of mine. His name is Thaddeus Hagen.
Hagen?
You know him?
The psychiatrist?
Yes.
Well, I've heard of him, but Doctor...
I want you to go to him alone. I want you to tell him exactly what you've told me. I'll phone him that you're coming, in spite of the hour, and I promise that I'll tell him nothing whatever about the case. I'll only ask him that he call me after he's talked with you.
You think I've gone crazy?
No. No, not by any means, but this whole experience has upset you badly, as it would anyone. And the most important thing at the moment is to get you back into the frame of mind where you can face this thing with your fullest capacity for sound judgment. Because you must work this out for yourself, Robert, but not in your present state of mind. Will you go and see Hagen? For your own sake, Robert.
Yes.
Now?
Now.
Good. I'll give you his address. It's only a few miles from here. And you must tell him that I'll be waiting to hear from him. Dr. Harris speaking.
Harris, this is Thaddeus Hagen.
Hagen, oh, yes, but I'm surprised to hear from you so soon.
Harris, that young man you said you were sending out here to see me?
Yes.
Robert Kingman?
Yes, Hagen, you talked to him?
No, I didn't.
Oh, but why not?
Because a terrible thing has happened.
Well, what is it, man? What is it?
Harris, the new high-tension power line the electric company strung across my property, 22,000 volts.
Hagen.
Yes. One of those lines broke. It fell across my front walk, and there in the darkness, he couldn't see it. He stumbled into it.
Good Lord.
He was killed immediately, Harris. Electrocuted.
Suspense. You've been listening to Dreams, starring Philip Sterling and written especially for Suspense by Jack Bundy. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr., music supervision by Ethel Huber. Heard in tonight's story were Edgar Staley as Dr. Harris, Connie Lemke as Janet, Richard Kendrick as Mr. Bolton, Raymond Edward Johnson as Thaddeus Hagen, and Barbara Kassar as the girl. Listen again next week when we return with Seeds of Disaster, written by David Hill. Another tale well calculated to keep you in... Suspense. Carelessness causes forest fires. Only you can prevent them. This is the CBS Radio Network.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I looked over his shoulder to see the big open mouth of a nice blue .45. And suddenly I knew what a man feels like when he's just finished digging his own grave.
Listen now to Act One of Death of an Old Flame, starring Larry Haynes and Terry Keane, and written especially for Suspense by George Bamber.
The name's Warren, Ronnie Warren. I play piano. I play in what they call piano bars. That's where they tear the top off a baby grand and build a counter all the way around for the jerks to put their drinks on. I must have played back and forth across the country a dozen times. Never the top spots, but all the joints I worked kept the pianos tuned.
They're running. The lady wants to hear a song.
That's Leo. He owns this place. Not a bad guy, as owners go, but still an owner. I look up at the chick at the far end of the piano. She smiles. I smile. Slow and shy. You know, I gave her the old cocker spaniel. Like a boy fresh out of college. And she eats it up.
He even wrote it out for you.
Yeah, so I see. $150 a week, big spender. It just stumbled to the back. I figured if she was going to make a move, she'd wait till his back was turned.
She said she'd like to hear Stardust.
Oh? Well, tell her that looks more like a telephone number to me.
I think she wants you to call her.
Well, tell her I never learned how to use a phone.
Ronnie, she's a customer.
Yeah, I know. So I smile at her again like we're both college sophomores and this is our first date. But she's a chick like any other. Poured into an expensive dress for a night on a town. A local princess who thinks she deserves better than she got. Better than a secondhand car in a garage and television every night. Better than the guy that brought her. Better than anything she'll ever have from the first moment she has it until the last moment she throws it away. For the moment, the piano player in the downtown club is better. And that piano player is me. Tell her I get off work at 2.
Says she can't make it. She's with a guy.
Yeah, I see that, but it hasn't stopped her this far, has it?
Ronnie?
Leo, I've been playing saloons for 10 years, and if I've learned anything, I've learned never to trust a chick and never give her an evil break. She'll be here, and I'll take her home. If something better doesn't turn up.
Tell me, Ronnie, how do you do it?
It's my boyish charm. My boyish charm. That's a joke around the saloons. I'm 35 years old, and I still look like I should be in college. Some guys say that's why I score so much, but really, it's the way I play piano. I play like I'm in another world. And when I look up, I always smile, like I'm pleasantly surprised that such excellent music could find itself in the presence of such superior company. I smile this way whether I'm looking at the wall, a bartender, a crying drunk, or the chick I'm working on at the moment. But out of all of them, only the chicks are flaky enough to take it personally.
May I get along without you?
I don't play that number.
You used to.
I hadn't seen her come in. And I swung around to see what the voice told me I would find. The eyes were still incredible. So deep and brilliantly blue that you had to look twice to believe what you saw.
Hello, Ronnie.
She smiled. And somebody took a clean blade and dumped my insides on the floor. There was nothing left but an empty, aching hurt. I turned back to the piano because I was afraid I couldn't control my mouth. Hello, Anna.
Mind if I sit down?
No, go right ahead. Haven't seen you around the pool in a long time.
5.5 years, to be exact.
I didn't keep track.
Will you buy me a drink?
I don't buy drinks for customers. She sat like she was suddenly very tired. And she toyed with her gloves for a moment the way she used to. Her mouth was as I remembered it. And her hair, still soft and natural gold. But then I noticed there was a hole in one of the fingers of her white cotton gloves, and her dress was last year's style. I signaled the bartender to buy her a drink.
Thanks. I read in the paper you were playing here. I kept track of you, where you'd been, when you'd hit town.
Yeah, well, I would have kept in touch, but when I got back that night, all I could find was an empty hotel room. You didn't leave much of a forwarding address.
Ronnie, I know. I know it was wrong. I've been sorry a million times. The paper never said, did you marry again?
But when a man said, until death do you part, I figured he wouldn't have bothered to say it if he hadn't meant it. Besides, it came in handy. When a chick would scream, marry me, I'd just say, oh, baby, I'd love to, but I'm already married. Saved me a lot of scenes. How about you?
No.
Frankie leave you for somebody else?
No, he won't marry me.
You still with him?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Ronnie? Hmm? Play our song.
Now, you heard me before. I don't play that
Ronnie,
song.
Please, I haven't heard it in so long.
Well, I forgot how it goes.
I don't believe that. Please, just once more for old time's sake. Please.
That's it. The set's over. Everybody gets a coffee break, including piano players. Come on, Anna. What's the pitch? You don't just run out and then pop up 6 years later for nothing. What do you want?
Ronnie, I need help.
What kind of help?
Frank's flat. We don't have a cent.
What do you want me to do? Loan him money?
No.
Well, then what?
He knows where he can make a score. He figures if he can make one good score, we can leave town and start all over again. Maybe go to another country.
What score?
Frank knows where there's $500,000 worth of furs just waiting to be picked up. It's an inside job. He'd handle it himself, except he'd be the first one they'd suspect. All you gotta do is help me load the truck and drive.
Now, let me get this straight. You want me to help you make a heist, risk a prison rap so you can have enough money to take your boyfriend, Frankie, someplace else where he can live happily ever after?
Ronnie, you'd get half the take.
Anna, the last thing I want is your money.
Ronnie, please. Look, I know I shouldn't ask you, but there's no place else I can turn, nobody else I can trust.
I wanted to take her in my arms and tell her everything would be all right. Because in the heart of every cynic lie the fragments of one great dream. And in the heart of every lady killer smolders the embers of one great love. So when she said,
please, Ronnie, just this once.
I said, okay, Anna, just this once. For old time's sake. When I got to work the next night, I talked to Leo. Boss man, look, I have some business from 10 or 12 tonight. I'd like out.
Hmm? It's important?
Yeah, it's so important that if anybody should ask, I'd be much obliged if you'd say I spent the time sleeping off a hangover on your office couch.
Okay. But let me give you a little piece of advice.
Like,
I don't want to know. But if this important business has anything to do with that broad I saw you talking to last night, I'd watch my step.
Why?
That's Frankie Amato's girl. She's one of the worst rats in this town.
I know.
Okay, so you know. But watch yourself.
When 10 o'clock came, I left the piano and slipped out the back way to a truck marked Royal Furs. Anna was sitting inside waiting.
Hi, Ronnie.
She drove us across town into the back of a small shop. No one was in the alley, so she got out and opened the overhead garage door with a key while I backed the truck inside. She closed the door behind us and locked it.
The furs are inside this cold storage vault.
She slid back the heavy door and started stripping the hangers. It didn't take long because there weren't too many pieces. I don't know anything about furs, but I do know that what we took wasn't worth any $500,000. Finally, the truck was loaded and we were ready to go. But then she started pouring cleaning fluid out of cans.
Look, help me spread this stuff around, huh?
What for?
So we can set fire to the place.
Why?
So we can destroy it. Frank says we have to set fire to the place to burn all the evidence.
Look,
You didn't mention anything about a fire before.
Honey, I didn't because I was afraid you wouldn't go through with it if I did.
Well, of course I wouldn't. Taking a few furs is one thing, but arson is something else. Somebody could get killed.
We have to. Right now, Frank is playing cards with the guy that owns this place. We have to fix his alibi with the time of the fire.
Oh, I see. All that matters is Frank and his alibi, huh? All that matters is that Frank is safe. That he's got somebody to steal for him, to lie for him, and for what? What does he do for you, Anna? Answer me. What does he do for you?
Honey,
come on, answer me. What does he do for you?
Nothing.
Then what do you stay with him for? You happy being turned into a two-bit thief to do his dirty work for him, and for what? To lick his boots in gratitude? Are you happy, Anna?
No.
Then why, Anna? Why?
Ronnie, I don't know. If I knew, I probably wouldn't do it. I've wanted to leave him 100 times. I don't know.
Just answer me one thing, baby. Do you love him?
I don't know.
Anna, answer me. Do you love him?
No.
I love you.
Ronnie, please.
I never stopped, Anna. Every town I hit, every place I went, I walked the places we used to walk and listened to the songs we used to sing.
Please don't.
You don't need this, Anna. Put it down. We could cut out of here, leave this town, and never come back.
No.
We could start all over again, right from the very beginning, Anna. Make it like it was before, only better, 100 times better.
Ronnie, please, no. Look, we can't talk about it now. There isn't any time. Help me finish this, and then we can go to some place and talk about it.
No.
Ronnie, please. We've got to get out of here.
No, no.
Help me do this, and I'll never ask you for another thing as long as I live.
No, Anna.
Please, Ronnie, please.
Okay. I'll do it. But on one condition.
What?
But after we burn this place, you'll come with me and promise never to see Frank again. Well?
Okay, Ronnie.
I took the can cleaning fluid from her hands and started splashing it all over the back room and the cold storage vault while she got more of it down off the shelf. We splashed more of it on the loading dock and down the hall leading toward the front of the store. Then she stopped at a door marked office.
In here.
Why in the office?
Frank says to make sure the whole store burns.
By the way, it didn't sound right to me. But I splashed the stuff all over the walls, behind the desk, the plush carpet on the floor, the papers over the desk, everything. Until the room was reeking with cleaning fluid flames until you could hardly breathe. And suddenly, little things I'd been noticing in the corner of my skull began to hit me wrong. It just didn't add up. Until now, Anna had been as cool as a cucumber, but now she was shaking so badly she could hardly hold a can in her hands. A long coil of rope lay on the top of a filing cabinet, looking strangely out of place. And then I noticed that all the mail spread across the desk was addressed to a Mr. Frank Amato. Now, wait a minute. This is Frank's office, isn't it?
Ronnie, we gotta hurry.
Come on, now answer my question. This is Frank's office, isn't
no.
it? This is Frankie's office, and he wants it burned for a reason. Now, what is it?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, you do, Anna. You know a lot more about this setup than you're letting on. Now, what is it?
Telling you what?
You haven't leveled with me all night, have you?
Stay away from
you
me.
You haven't leveled with me since the night we met.
Don't touch
Come
me.
Come on, answer me, Anna. What's going on?
You heard the lady. Piano player, keep your hands off.
I looked over her shoulder to see the big open mouth of a nice blue .45. And suddenly I knew what a man feels like when he's just finished digging his own grave.
In a moment, we'll return with Act Two of Suspense. Now, from DuPont comes the most advanced antifreeze and summer coolant ever developed for any car, new or old. Its name, Tellar. T-E-L-A-R. Tellar. It takes 1.5 gallons of Tellar to protect the average full-size car down to zero. And at its new low price, your dealer can protect your car with Tellar for only about $1 more than ordinary antifreezes, even less for compact cars. But, and this is important, once installed, DuPont Tellar can be left in all year round, summer and winter, for as long as you keep your car, any car, new or old.
Your servicing dealer will tell you exactly why this is possible. In addition, Tellar is specially recommended for modern aluminum engines. So ask your servicing dealer to install Tellar antifreeze and summer coolant in your car. Remember, it's made by DuPont. Tellar. T-E-L-A-R. Tellar.
That's right, college boy. Keep your hands over your head.
No one ever introduced us, but I'd say offhand you're Frank.
And you're bright, college boy, real bright.
Now, look, if this is a shakedown, I'm afraid you got the wrong party. I'm broke.
Oh, this isn't penny-ante stuff. I'm going after. This is money, big money.
Well, pardon my density, but I still don't get it.
You've heard of insurance, haven't you, college boy?
Oh, sure, sure. But I don't see how you can collect on a store you don't own. Or do you?
I don't own the store. I don't have that kind of change at present. So I insured myself. Alive, I'm not worth 2 cents, but dead, I'm worth 50 grand. That's quite a piece of change, and Anna here is my only beneficiary.
Oh. Well, I don't know how this figures me. Unless you want me to help you commit suicide.
Oh, suicides don't collect. Besides, I wouldn't die for any broad. That's strictly for suckers like you.
Okay, I've been a sucker up until now, but I don't think I can make this gig anymore, man.
Nobody's going to commit suicide. I'm going to be murdered.
Well, like I said, I still don't get it.
I guess you ain't as bright as I thought. I told the owner of the store I was going to work late tonight, go over the books. The police will think I accidentally left the door unlocked. Somebody found it open, came in, tied me to my chair, stole all the furs, then burned the store to destroy the evidence.
Now, wait a minute.
In the meantime, I'll be on my way to Mexico, where Anna will join me after she's had sufficient time to recover from her grief and collected the insurance money.
Well, there's only one thing wrong with that little plan, Frankie. Nobody would ever confuse me with you, not in a million years.
Oh, I don't know. We're about the same height and build. You ever seen what a man looks like after he's been soaked with cleaning fluid and touched off with a match? I'm betting there's not much more than a crisp char to compare anything with. You always wanted to take my place, college boy? Sit down in my chair behind the desk and turn around and face the wall.
I did as I was told. There wasn't much else I could do. But before I did, I took one last look at Anna. She couldn't face me.
Hold the gun on him, Anna, while I tie him up. If he even looks like he's going to move, let him have it.
Since I was as good as dead anyway, I knew that anything I did would be the right thing. They say that a man who's about to die starts praying. I didn't. I started thinking hard and fast because I wanted so badly to go on living. I don't look like I could punch my way out of a paper bag, but while I was waiting out the army's boredom in Japan, a gentle old Japanese man taught me you don't need brawn to defend yourself, just brains and speed. And a thing called karate. Piano player's best friend, you don't hurt your hands. And I knew I had to have something to defend myself against husbands and boyfriends. So I learned karate and the art of timing and surprise. I waited until I could feel him touch my arm. And when he slid his hand down to my wrist, I made my move. I grabbed two of his fingers and heard them snap as I bent them back. That, coupled with surprise, made it easy for me to slip him around in a half Nelson. His fingers hanging like loose spaghetti, so his body was between me and the gun. I knew Anna wouldn't hesitate to shoot me, but I figured maybe Frankie Boy was something
else. Ah! Shoot! For God's sake, Anna, shoot!
I can't!
Kill him, Anna! Kill him!
I might hit you!
All right, Anna. Put the gun down and back out into the hall.
No!
Go on, do as I say, Anna. I can kill him with my hands if I want to. You know that.
No, Anna,
you know I can do it, Anna. You've seen me practice, remember? All I have to do is add a little pressure right here.
Do like he says. Do like he says.
That's better, Anna. I waited until she put the gun on the table and then backed clear out to the hall before I spun Frank around and slammed him with stiff fingers hard right under the breastbone. He crumpled like a rag doll with his eyes bulging like a drunk with the heaves. I ran from the office, grabbing Anna by the arm as I went.
What did you do to him?
Nothing, nothing. He'll live. Come on.
You killed him.
He only wishes I had. Come on. I dragged her all the way back to the loading dock, and she fought me every step of the way. We jumped down and ran past the truck to a small door where I struggled with the bolt, all the time keeping a tight grip on her wrist. I guess I didn't jab him hard enough because Frank came out of the dock after us, doubled over in pain, his gun in his hand.
Frank!
Come back! Can you come back?
I shoved her out the door ahead of me and dove out just as he cut loose. The shots were like matches in a gas tank. The cleaning fluid fumes made the whole building explode in a roar of flame.
Frank!
Come on, let's get out of here.
No, we can't leave him. He'll burn alive.
You can't help him, Anna. It's too late.
Let me go to him.
Anna, you can't go in there.
Frank, I've got to...
Anna, no. Anna, come back. Anna!
See here in the paper where my old friend Frank Amato finally met with a fatal accident. He burned to death.
Ah, that so?
It happened last night. I don't guess you'd know anything about it, would you?
No. I don't guess I would.
I didn't think so. The way the cops figured it, he was trying to rob the place where he worked, and then burn the store to cover his tracks. And somehow he touched off the place ahead of time and burned him and the girl that was with him.
That was a girl?
Yeah. They're probably the one that was in here last night. But they aren't sure yet. They haven't even been able to identify his body positively yet.
That's too bad.
Yeah. That's the way I thought you'd feel. I don't look now, but I think you've got a customer coming your way. I think I'll check the bar.
Yeah, thanks, Leo. I knew what was coming. Without even looking, I knew.
Do you know Stardust?
I have to struggle to keep from choking. Do I know Stardust? But I don't let it show. I look up, slow and shy, and smile. And give her the old cocker spaniel. Stardust. It's a beautiful song about a beautiful girl. I was hoping you'd ask.
Thank you.
The pleasure's mine.
I've been listening to you. You play very well.
Thank you. It's been a long time since anyone said that. Most people just drink, pretend to listen. But you, you're different. You're special. So, for a special girl, I'm going to play a special number. Not just something like Stardust. You very well. But from now on, let's just call it our song.
Listening to Death of an Old Flame, starring Larry Haynes and Terry Keane, and written especially for Suspense by George Bamber. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Special music for today's story of Suspense was composed and performed by Norman Parris. Featured in tonight's story were Ralph Bell as Frank, Robert Donnelly as Leo, and Evelyn Juster as the girl. Listen again next week when we return with Till Death Do Us Part, written by Ben Kagan. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To check out our other storytelling podcasts like Let's Not Meet and Odd Trails, go to crypticcountypodcasts.com. We'll see you next time.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story? That's what ought to happen next.
It did.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.